Jacob comes to Laban. One day toward evening, as the sun was sinking behind him in the sallow mists, and the shadow of rider and beast was like a tower on the plain, on this late afternoon, when the air would not cool but was a breathless heat under the brazen dome of heaven, so that it quivered above the dry grass and seemed about to burst into flame, when Jacob's tongue was parched in his throat, for he had had no water since the day before, and went rocking along with his mind in a daze, he saw between two hills that made a gateway into a rolling stretch of country a moving point far off in the plain. And his eye, keen despite his fatigue, recognized it at once as a flock of sheep, with shepherds and dogs, gathered round a well. He jumped for joy, and breathed a thankful sigh to Yah, the Most High God. But his only clear thought was water, water! And he cried out the word from his parching throat, clucking to his beast, that seemed to know the joyful news, for it summoned its powers, stretched its neck, dilated its nostrils, and lengthened its stride. Soon he was so near that he could see the colored markings on the sheep, the faces of the herdsmen under their shady hats, the hair on their breasts, and the bands on their arms. The dogs growled and were on the defensive, preventing the sheep from scattering. But the men quieted them with a word, for they had no fear of a single rider, and also they saw that he greeted them courteously, even from afar. There were four or five men, Jacob remembered, with perhaps 200 sheep, of a large, thick-tailed breed, as his trained eye quickly noted. They were squatting idly round the well, which was still covered with a round stone. They all carried slings, and one of them a lute. Jacob spoke to them at once, calling them brothers, and with his hand to his forehead, saying to them at random that their God was great, although he was not certain which one they acknowledged. But to that, as well as to whatever else he said, they only shook their heads, or rather wagged them from side to side, indicating their regret by clucking with their tongues. But one of them turned out to have a silver disc on his breast with his name on it, Jerubbaal, and to be a native of Amuru land, as he said. His speech was not quite like Jacob's, but sufficiently so that they understood each other, and Jerubbaal, the shepherd, could act as interpreter and translate what Jacob said into the Umu-Umu language of the others. They conveyed their thanks for his acknowledgment of the power of their God, invited him to sit down in their circle, and introduced themselves by their names, which were Bulatu, Shamash Lamasi, Dog of Ea, and so on. He did not leave them to ask his own name and origins, but hastened to give them, with a passing but embittered reference to the mischance which had reduced him to such poverty, and implored them above all else to give him water for his parching tongue. They handed him a leathern bottle. The water was already lukewarm, but he gulped it down, rejoicing. His camel, however, had to wait. The sheep, too, seemed waiting to be watered. Yet the stone lay over the mouth of the well, and nobody rolled it away. "Whence came his brothers?" Jacob asked. "Haran, Haran," they answered. "Bel Haran, Lord of the Way. Great, great, the greatest."
"One of the greatest, at least," said Jacob guardedly. "But I am bound for Haran. Is it far?"
Not far at all. The town lay on the other side of the nearby slope. They could reach it with their flocks in an hour.
"Praise be to God," Jacob cried. "Then am I at the end, after more than 17 days' journeying? Scarcely can I believe it."
And he asked them if they knew Laban, son of Bethuel, son of Nahor, since they were from Haran.
They knew him well. He dwelt not in the city, but only a half hour from here. They were waiting for his sheep.
"Was he in good health?"
"Very good. Why?"
"Because I have heard of him," Jacob said. "Do you pluck your sheep, or shear them?" They all answered with scorn that, of course, they sheared them.
"Did they pluck them where he came from?"
"Oh, no," he answered. "They were far enough on, in Beersheba and the region round, to have shears." They came back to Laban, saying that they were waiting for Rachel, his daughter. "As to that," he cried, "he had greatly longed to inquire. About the waiting, that was.
for ye sit here round the covered well like watchmen, instead of rolling away the stone that your flocks may drink. Why, then? True, it is yet early to drive them home, but ye could move the stone and water your lord's sheep instead of lounging here, even though ye must still wait for the wench, Laban's daughter, whatever her name is. He spoke with authority, like a man who was more than a servant, even though he called them brothers. For the water had strengthened him in body and mind, and he felt his superiority. They talked together, Umu, Umu, and then told him through Jerubbaal that what they did was regular and in order, and a matter of courtesy. They might not roll away the stone and water and go home before Rachel came with the sheep which she tended for her father. For all the flocks had to be gathered together and driven home at the same time, and if Rachel reached the well before them, she too waited until they came and rolled away the stone. "Ye say sooth," Jacob laughed, "for she is but a maiden, and it needeth the arms of men to roll away the lid." But they answered that was all the same why she waited. In any case, she did so, and they did the same. "Good," said Jacob then. "Ye are belike in the right, and for you it would not be right any other way. But I am sad that my camel must thirst so long. How said ye that the maiden's name is? Rachel?" he repeated. "Jerubbaal, say what that meaneth in our tongue. Hath she then yeaned, the ewe for whom we wait so long?" "Oh no," they said, "she was as pure as the spring lilies in the field, and undefiled like the petals of the garden rose in the dewy morning, and had never known the arms of man. She was 12 years old." It was plain that they respected her, and unconsciously Jacob did the same. He smiled and drew a long breath, for the thought of meeting with his uncle's child made his heart contract a little with pleasurable curiosity. He chatted a while longer with the shepherds through Jerubbaal about the local prices for sheep and how much wool one got for 5 minas and how many selahs of corn their masters allowed them in the month, until one of them said, "She cometh." Jacob had just begun to beguile the time with his robber story, but he broke off and turned to look where the shepherd pointed. Thus first he beheld her, his heart's destiny, his soul's bride, for whose lovely eyes he was to serve 14 years, the mother sheep of his lamb. Rachel was walking in the midst of her flock. It huddled close about her, and a dog with lolling tongue ran at the margin of the woolly flood. She raised her staff, the shepherd's crook, the top of which consisted of a metal sickle or knife, by way of greeting the group, putting her head on one side and smiling, so that Jacob, while she was still at a distance, saw for the first time her shining white teeth, with the spaces between them. As she came up, she overtook the animals round her and walked in front, parting them with her crook. "Here am I," said she. Like a short-sighted person, she contracted her eyes, but then lifted her brows in surprise and delight as she added, "Lo, a stranger!" She must have seen long before, if her short-sightedness was not unusually bad, Jacob's figure and the riding camel, but she had given no sign at first. The shepherds round the well kept silence and held back from the meeting of the young master and mistress. Jerubbaal, too, seemed to feel that they were already in touch. He gazed in the air, munching grain. Jacob greeted Rachel with upraised hands, while her dog barked round them. She gave a quick word of reply to his salute, and the two stood there, soberly, side by side, in the bright slanting rays of the late afternoon sun, among the tumbling sheep, enveloped in their warm and friendly steam, under the wide, pale sky. Laban's daughter was slender, as one could see, despite the shapelessness of her garment, a yellow smock or pinafore with a red border patterned in black moons. It hung free and comfortably from throat to hem, showing the little bare feet, but fitted round the shoulders, displaying their appealing fineness and tenderness, and it had sleeves reaching halfway down the upper arm. Her black hair was tumbled rather than curled, and almost short, at least shorter than Jacob had ever seen it on women at home. Only 2 braids, curling at the ends, hung across her cheeks and down upon her shoulders. She played with one of them as she stood and looked. What a sweet face! Who shall describe its magic? Who shall decipher the sum of those sweet and happy dispensations of Providence, out of which life, groping among inherited stores, adds the one unique thing to make up the charm of the human face? It is a charm balanced on a razor's edge. It hangs, as one may say, on a hair, so that if one tiny trait were altered, the smallest muscle differently placed, though but little were changed, yet the heart's delight, the whole little miracle, would be lacking. Rachel was beautiful and well-favored, and both at once, in such an arch and gentle way, that one saw, Jacob saw, as she looked at him, how spirit and willpower, wisdom and courage in their feminine counterparts, were the effective source of all this loveliness. So expressive her whole person was of open-eyed readiness for life. She looked towards him, one hand fingering her braid, the other grasping the staff that rose above her head, and measured the young man, gaunt from his journey, in dusty, faded, and tattered garments, with the brown and bearded, sweat-marked face that was not the face of a hireling. As she looked, the nostrils, perhaps too thick, of her little nose, seemed to dilate drolly, and her upper lip, which stuck out somewhat beyond the lower, to shape with it, in the corners of her mouth, all by itself, and with no tension of the muscles, that lovely thing, a tranquil smile. But loveliest and best of all was the look, peculiarly sweetened and transfigured by her short-sightedness, in her black, perhaps just faintly slanting, eyes. That look which, with no exaggeration, nature had endowed with the utmost charm that she can give a human face. A deep, liquid, speaking, melting, friendly night, at once serious and playful, and such as Jacob never before in all his life had seen or thought to see. "Down, Marduka!" she cried, stooping to reprove the noisy dog. And then she asked, as Jacob could guess without understanding, "Whence cometh my lord?" He pointed westwards over his shoulder, and said, "Amuru." She turned towards Jerubbaal, and laughing beckoned him with a motion of her chin. "So far?" said she, in words and gestures. And then she asked in more detail, saying that the west was wide, and naming two or three of its cities. "Beersheba," Jacob answered. She started and repeated the word, and her mouth, which he had already begun to love, shaped the name of Isaac. His face twitched, his mild eyes ran over. He did not know Laban's people, and would not have been eager for contact with them. He was an outlaw, stolen to the lower world, not here of his own will, and felt not much cause for soft emotion. But his nerves gave way. Under the strain of the journey they had gone soft. He was at his goal, and this maiden, with eyes so darkly sweet, uttered his far-off father's name, and was his mother's brother's child. "Rachel," said he with a sob, and put out his arms to her, his hands trembling, "may I kiss thee?" "How canst thou claim such a right?" she asked, and retreated in smiling dismay. She gave no sign of suspecting anything, just as before she had not seemed to mark the presence of a stranger. But with one arm still stretched out towards her, he pointed to his own breast. "Jacob! Jacob!" he said. "I, Yitzhak's son, Rebekah's son, Laban. Thou, I, child of mother, child of brother." She gave a little cry. She put one hand on his breast and so held him away from her as together they reckoned up the kinship between them, laughing, but with tears in both their eyes. They cried out names, nodded their heads, making out the genealogical tree, by signs to each other, putting their forefingers together, crossing them, or laying the left across the tip of the right. "Laban? Rebekah!" cried she. "Bethuel, son of Nahor, and Milcah, thy grandfather and mine!" "Terah!" cried he. "Abraham, Isaac, Nahor, Bethuel. Abraham, forefather, thine and mine." "Laban, Adina," cried she, "Leah and Rachel, sisters, cousins, thine." They nodded to each other over and over amid tears,
while they came to the conclusion as to the blood relationship between them. Through both his parents and through her father. She gave him her cheeks, and he kissed her solemnly. Three dogs sprang at them, baying, as the creatures do when men, for good or evil, lay hands on each other. The shepherds applauded rhythmically, singing in high head tones, "Loo, loo, loo!" So he kissed her, first on one cheek, then on the other. He forbade his senses to perceive more of her femininity than just the softness of her cheeks. He kissed her reverently, but the friendly darkness of her eyes had bewitched him already, and he felt favored to have received her kiss at once. Many a one must look longingly, desire, and serve before there would be incredibly vouchsafed to him that which had fallen at once, as it were, into Jacob's lap, because he was the cousin from afar. When he let her go, she laughed, rubbing with her palm the cheek his rough beard had tickled, and cried, "Quick, Jerubbaal, Shamash, Bulatu, roll away the stone that the sheep may drink, and see that they drink, yours and mine, and water my cousin Jacob's camel, and be swift and skillful, ye men, that I may run to Laban my father, and tell him that Jacob is come, his sister's son. He is on the meadows not far from here, and will come running in haste and joy to embrace him. Make haste and follow after me, for I will run whip and spurs." Jacob got the sense of what she said by tone and gesture, even some of the words. Already, for her lovely eyes, he began to learn the speech of her land. And when she had begun to run, he stopped the men and cried so that she might hear, "Halt, brothers, away from the stone, for that is Jacob's work. Ye have guarded it like good watchmen, but now I will roll it away from the well for Rachel my cousin, I alone. For not yet hath the journey drawn away all the strength from my man's arms, and it is fitting that I lend their strength to the daughter of Laban, and roll the stone, that the blackness may be taken from the moon, and the round of the waters, and become beautiful." So they made way for him, and with all his strength he rolled the stone away, though it was not the work of one man. Yet by his strength alone he put the heavy stone on one side, though his arms were not of the strongest. The cattle pressed forwards, and there was a many-toned baaing of sheep, goats, and lambs, and Jacob's camel grunted as it got to its feet. The men drew up the living water and poured it in the troughs. With Jacob they kept watch over the watering, drove away those that had drunk, and made way for the thirsty. And when all were sated, they put the stone again over the hole, covered it with earth and grass, that the place might not be known, and uninvited folk make use of the well, and they drove home all the sheep together, Laban's as well as their master's, and Jacob towered up on his camel in the midst of the press.